I think that there was pretty much universal recognition that one of the overwhelming silver linings of the terrible tragedy with the little boy, with the three boys, excuse me, was that little bit of achdus that we felt as a nation. I know that for the last few days of that ordeal, I was in the States, and I felt it in the various neighborhoods I was here. But I could tell you that it does not hold a candle to what we felt in Eretz Yisrael. Now, it's possible that that's proportional to sometimes the problems that we deal with there, which also tend to be a little bit more emotional and extreme than they are in the States. But the tikkun was also there. We really felt tremendous, tremendous achdus. And I give the shir with a little bit of a tefillah that some of the ideas in this shir can help us, each of us in our own Dalet Amos, can help us hold on a little bit to that sense of achdus. The title of the shir is about learning to disagree agreeably. Why can't we all just get along? By which I mean to say, this is not a Pollyannish or a utopian shir with an unrealistic dream, well, there'll be no more differences. I'm not envisioning a world like that at all. The aim and the hope, ambitious but I don't believe unrealistic, is for a world in which there can be differences without sinas chinam and without machlokes. And it's to that which I'd like to offer a few thoughts. Obviously, the 3 weeks begin in under a week, less than a week away from that season of the year. And I'll try to at some point maybe even get back to the famous Gemara, which we know that talks about this. But certainly at the minimum, just to mention now at the outset that, of course, we're aware that we're all still living in the aftermath of the Churban of the second Beis HaMikdash, which the Gemara describes as being a result of Sinas Chinam. So certainly, not only inspired by the events of earlier this month, but also in anticipation of the Bein HaMetzarim, certainly no better time than this time of year to try to focus on this aspect. Now, I just want to point out, when we speak about machlokes, so the truth is that we could and we will be speaking about two different levels entirely. On the one hand, there's the type of machlokes which we're often involved with in our personal lives. That can be a machlokes between husband and wife, between parents and children, between neighbors, members of the same shul. That's a form of machlokes which plagues us. But that is very different and has different contours, different aspects, and therefore would require, I think, different tikkun than on a more, you could say, global or communal and ideological level. The machlokes between that chassidus and that chassidus, between this ideology and that ideology, between this yeshiva and this yeshiva, between that Rosh Yeshiva and that Rosh Yeshiva. We have that kind of machlokes also in the community. We've had it for many, many, many years. But that's of a completely different variety than the more personal, local type of machlokes. So what I'd like to do, because I think they both have to be addressed individually, is first to speak about some aspects. I'll offer three suggestions, three insights into machlokes, specifically the kind of that's more personal, often more petty. And then I'd like to broaden it out and speak about the more communal, ideological, hashkafic machlokes, and then hopefully bring it together in some kind of a tzara shava which we can work with. So that's an ambitious game plan for under 45 minutes, but we'll do what we can. So my first point is that we should ask ourselves, why do we fight? And when I say fight, I mean specifically persist. A few days ago, we had a lecture about anger. Anger, getting angry at somebody, is the first step. And again, right now we're talking about just the personal, husband and wife, neighbors, people in the community, in the shul. So anger is the initial step. That's what we spoke about, right? Someone did something wrong, and you get angry. Right? That we spoke about. What I'm speaking about now is, when I call machlokes, I mean, why do we persist in that? Because we could get angry, again, right or wrong, but we could get angry, and then we could drop it and move on. A machlokes means we didn't drop it. We persisted in it. It wasn't just enough that I got angry last week. It's that I'm still angry. I'm persisting in it. So why do we do that? Why don't we let go? Why do we persist? So I think one of the reasons is because, of course, I'm right. I'm right. We were wronged, right? She shouldn't have spoken to me that way. My wife shouldn't talk to me that way, right? The neighbor shouldn't have wronged me that way. I'm right, and they're wrong. And it's almost like a mitzvah to persist. The point has to be made until they get it. So I think that we should keep in mind an insight of Reb Chaim Shmulevitz. Reb Chaim Shmulevitz was the great Mir Rosh Hashiva. And he pointed out that there's a pasuk, we are familiar with this, it's not that long ago in the weekly Torah reading in Parshas Korach, where the pasuk tells us, Lo yiyah kakorach ucha adaso, right? Like a postscript, a P.S. to the story. It will not be in the future like Korach and his minions. So what does that mean, Lo yiyah? How do you understand those two words? So many commentaries, many mafarshim understand that this is a halachic Lo yiyah. And some of the Rishonim who count the 613, the Moni and Mitzvos, list as one of the 613 an Isser Machlokes. It's Usser to be involved in Machlokes. And not everyone agrees in that technical way. Not everyone counts that as one of the 613. But some say, yes, you see, it is Lo Yia, Lo Ini, prescriptive. It's Usser. However, there are other Mefarshim who see this as a descriptive and a declarative statement by the Torah. Lo yia, a prophecy about the future. There will never be, ever, anything like Korach v'Adaso. Really? That there's never ever going to be an attempt, a coup for power? There's never ever going to be two relatives who can't decide who deserves to be the next fill in the blank? Doesn't make any sense. So comes Reb Chaim Shmulevitz with a brilliant insight. He says, what will never be a prophecy? What will never be in the future? He says, very simple. In the machlokas between Moshe and Aaron and Korach and his minions, Moshe and Aaron were 100% right. Korach and his people were 0% right. Everything that they ascribed and accused Moshe and Aaron of doing had no basis in fact whatsoever. 100-0. Says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, for all history, there will never, ever be a machlokes that is as black and white as that one. You think you're 100% right, but lo yiyah kekorach v'adaso. Maybe you're 90% right. Maybe you're 87% right. Maybe, in a rare case, you're even 99% right. But the other side always has something. We shouldn't be so convinced. We fight this milchemes mitzvah because I'm right. Says Reb Chaim Shmulevitz, you're not 100% right. There's never ever been a machlokes since the time of Moshe and Aaron and Korach where you were 100% right. And if we can internalize that, so of course the next obvious step is if we just spend a little bit of trying time to understand what is the other 1% or 10% or 15% or maybe even 49% that the other person, our husband, our wife, our coworker, our boss, what they have. Just that shift in mentality, I think, could diffuse a lot of the tension that we have in our lives. That's number one. There's a second reason that I think that we persist, and that is that I think on some level, and I'll stereotype and say that this will afflict men more than women, and that is the need to win. I would say women are completely exempt from this. Okay, maybe not at all. And not every man is as hyper-competitive as maybe I'm imagining. But there is certainly in human nature, when we get involved in something, we almost forget about who was right and who was wrong. Then it's not about that anymore. That was the first thing we mentioned. It's on some, at some point and on some level, we've invested ourselves in a position and we're going to need to win. Just recently, just earlier this summer, I saw this, I had never seen it before, my breath was taken away. This point is made in the writings of the Chafetz Chaim. And he speaks about midos, right? And we know, as we spoke about a little bit earlier in the week, there are good midos, plenty of those, and of course there are also, unfortunately, some bad midos. So when I think of, and over the years when I've had Rebbeim and Mashgichim talk about bad midos, there's certain obvious ones, the anger and cruelty and selfishness and other vices that we have. But I have to be honest, I never heard anyone give a schmooze about what the Chafetz Chaim refers to as midas hanitzachon, the need to win. And that mida can become all-consuming, can grip us, and it doesn't let go. He mentions the following. I'll just read a little bit of the quotation. He says, "Tachbul echad." There's a certain trick that the Yetzer Hara has. "Lenatzeach afilu odam hashalem." Right? Sometimes if you take a step back and you see certain people of Al Machlokes, you can't believe it. Because you know them and from in any other context, as such a good person, such a nice person, balanced person, reasonable person, and now they're caught up in this. So he says the Yetzer Hara has certain tricks. Tachbulot. There are certain tricks. And what's one of them? So he says, it's a two-step process, and it's in mirrors our lecture series. What happens? First, yichnesu rakla midas hakas. First they get angry, step one, and then comes hanitzachon. And then once they got angry, is the need to win. And once those two steps, that 1-2 punch comes, then kol ha-makshim yulafan of lemeshur. And all the roadblocks which could have saved the person from himself, from herself. Sometimes we get upset when there are roadblocks. But if we knew it was on the other side, sometimes our lives are saved due to roadblocks. But all once those two steps happen, then the roadblocks are cleared out. And it's just a straight path to our own demise. Says the Chafetz Chaim, what's the two-step process that even the Odom HaShalem gets plagued by? First, a little anger, a little provocation, kas, and then midas hanitzachon. And he points out, he continues, and he says, even when a person knows that they're in the omek of the machlokis, they're in deep, even if they see that they see, yira be'enav, shaholech bederach choshech, va'afela, they're going to go to Gehenna ma'yedezeh, it doesn't matter, because they have to win, even if it takes them to the emek sheol, to the depths. But they're going down, but they're not giving up. I'm right, and I'm going to win. Now, I don't have an easy solution for how to free yourself of this, but certainly the first thing is we should be aware of it, that very often it's that pathetic. Something so small, but we become so hitched and so excited by it, when we make all sorts of excuses, but if we're just honest to do a little self-reflection, often it's about our need to win. And third, the third point I want to make about the personal or interpersonal challenges sometimes we have is, sometimes we do get past all of this. We got angry, we shouldn't have, but we did. We got involved in machlokas, we shouldn't have, but we did. At some point, sometimes we can pull ourselves up. It's a counter-gravitational, but we can pull ourselves up against those forces of needing to win and needing to be right. And we still can't end it. Why? Because one of the hardest things to do in life is to say you're sorry and to admit that you might be at least partially wrong. It is an incredibly difficult thing to do. And obviously, it's directly proportional how long the machlokas has persisted, how much we've invested, how much we've lost as a price for that machlokas. But each one of those things builds up and they become barriers to doing the only thing that would solve the problem, which is just saying you're sorry, just figuring out a way to make up. So I just give you a little bit of chizuk, also from Parshas Korach. We know that as kind of a postscript at the end of that story, so there is a sign just unequivocally without any doubt to show that Aaron really was the genuine leader chosen by Hashem. When the Torah tells us, Parach mat Aaron, the base Levi, and what happened to Aaron's staff? All of a sudden it was, Yotze Parach, Yotze Tzitz, V'yigmol shekedim. Right? The staff all of a sudden blossomed with almonds. Why almonds? Of all things. Almonds. I like some salted almonds, the roasted almonds. I like that. But what has that got to do with anything that's going on? Ma'inyan shekedim etzel machlokes. So many years ago, I saw an idea in the name of Shlomo Zalman HaKohen Cook. I believe that was the Rav Cook's father. He was a Rav in Europe. And he made the following brilliant observation. The Gemara in Maseches Brachos discusses what is the correct bracha on a certain kind of bitter almonds. What's the bracha? Shahakol, Ha'etz. What's the right bracha? So if you look in the Mefarshim, the commentaries on that Gemara, they point out, again, I don't know how this compares to what our modern scientific awareness is, but in the Mefarshim they describe two different types of almonds. There are those that begin bitter and become sweet, and there are those that as they ripen, they start off sweet, and then they become more bitter. Says Reb Shlomo Zalman HaKohen Cook, these two almonds are metaphors for the opposite experiences of machlokes and shalom and peace. Some almonds, the Mefarshim says, start off sweet and they become bitter. That's machlokes. Let's be honest, when you get involved sometimes in a machlokes in the beginning, it's a geschmack. Oh, your adrenaline is flowing and you got to talk to people about it and maybe you got a good shtoch in and you felt your blood is flowing, you're alive. But when it persists even a little, it starts to get very, very bitter. Shalom is just the opposite. To make peace, to pull yourself out of that free fall, is very bitter. It's very hard. But if anyone who's ever been involved in such a situation knows, once you do that, once you take that first step, you say you're sorry, everyone agrees to just move on, there's nothing more sweet. That starts off bitter, but it becomes the sweetest thing. Almonds, in that regard, are the perfect metaphor. So it's true, we should be, cut ourselves a little slack. When we feel that need to procrastinate and put it off, and I'll call my sister and I'll say I'm sorry and I'll make up with my neighbor and I'll do, we procrastinate. We're not the only ones. It's part of the human nature. It is a bitter thing. It is a hard thing to do. We have to just try to remind ourselves and anticipate and envision how sweet it will be if we could just make that first step. So. That's my initial thoughts on just some of the aspects, I think, of machlokes, which plague us on a personal level. And again, some suggestions, some insights that could help us, I hope, deal with those challenges. Let's broaden it a bit now and speak about some of the communal machlokes. So just the other day, I can't remember what the issue was, but someone said to me, Rabbi, you heard the one about the two Jews and the three shuls, right? This is an old story for our people. We're a very, how shall I say, passionate people. And because of our passions and our striving for truth, so we often get into these kind of principled, communal, ideological kind of machlokas. So I mentioned before, the Gemara says, in fact, that that's why the second Beis Hamikdash was destroyed. Sinas chinam, they had Torah and Ma'asim Tovim, but they had sinas chinam, there was machlokes. What's the sinas chinam that the Gemara is talking about? What do you think the Gemara means? Let's think about it for a minute. So I think the simple pashtus, if you will, the simple understanding of that Gemara maybe relates to the first part of our lecture. Right? People were cutting in line. Right, people were, in Israel, whether it's the bank or the post office, things like that, right, those lines can be very tense places. And there's always some guy who thinks that they're going to sneak in and cut the line at the doctor's office or at the post office or the bank. And it could, right, people are mean, they cut you off, they, all sorts of things, right? That's a simple understanding of the Gemara. Sinas chinam, Jews were fighting with each other, they were nice to each other. Many Mefarshim, I think, learned that way. But the Natsiva Volozhin, Rav Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, one of the great, great Jewish leaders of the last few hundred years. So he, in a number of his writings, I'm aware of at least four different places in his writings where he explains this phenomena in a different way. He says, when the Gemara spoke about sinas chinam, baseless hatred, being the basis of the destruction of the second Beis HaMikdash, the second temple, he says it's specifically referring to ideological, religious intolerance or machlokas. He says specifically what happened in the time of the second temple, the second Beis HaMikdash. If someone saw people acting differently than them, they wore the talis differently, maybe the skirt was a little bit kind of a different snius, they blew the shofar differently. Not that they didn't blow the shofar, not that they didn't wear the snius, not that they didn't light the candles, but he says they saw people acting religiously, performing mitzvos differently than them. Chashdu aleihem kapi koris. They assume that they're heretics. It's not that they're just different, not even that they're more makil, more machmir, they're heretics. Anything different from my Masorah, from my Rebbe, from my teacher, my tradition, my customs, different than me? Heresy. And he says this is his bigger chiddush on a chiddush. His novel point is after that, and that justified not only hatred, but the hatred snowballed into murder. When the Gemara says the first Beis HaMikdash included murder, but the second destruction included sinas chinam, he said it wasn't to the exclusion of the first. But the Gemara was saying it was in the first Beis HaMikdash they just killed to kill. In the second Beis HaMikdash, because of their baseless hatred, which was ideologically driven, they even, not every time, not everybody, but they even were led to kill. Because if this person is such a heretic, such an apikara, such an enemy of God, so who but me has been appointed to save the world and save God, and therefore I am going to deal what I need to do. I say he repeats this in a number of places. For those who are interested in his introduction, perhaps the most famous time he talks about this is introduction to his commentary to Sefer Bereishis. Hamek Dover is the name of his commentary on the Torah, and the introduction to Sefer Bereishis, he makes this point. But he makes it in a few other places, not only in Hamek Dover, he makes this in the Merome Sada, his commentary to the Gemara in Yuma, which is about the Beis HaMikdash, in one of the Tshuvas in Meshiv Dover, and he has a number of lines which you just have to hear. As I said, it's not just the ideological hatred and intolerance, but what intolerance can lead to, machlokes, murder, terrible. And he refers to, for example, in one place, he talks about shvichas damim beheter, or shvichas damim l'shem shamayim. Murder, but justified, self-justified, out of principle. After all, you know, look what they're doing. I mean, that's not the way you put on tefillin. I mean, one day Yontif, 2 days, Chutz Laretz, shake him. And it led to even to murder. So this is unfortunately an old story, and the stakes are quite high. And I think that it's specific on the communal or ideological level that there's a different dimension of why we can't let go. And that's what I've already alluded to. Because very often we are inflated with self-importance. And we all see ourselves, some of us see ourselves as privates in this great battle, L'shem Shamayim, this Tzivos Hashem, and some of us even see ourselves as captains and even generals in this battle. And there's no one else who could possibly take care of this problem. The whole thing, if I could just put this person, I could just put her in her place, just tell her she's not talking the right way, she's not dressing the right way, he's not doing the right way. And there's a very pithy, it's almost a biting, pithy comment that they say in the name of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter, the great founder of the Musar movement, that makes this point. The Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, as is well known, the Mishnah says that there's two types of debates, of arguments that people have. Some are what's called L'shem Shamayim, for the sake of heaven. People have an argument for the sake of heaven. And other times people are motivated as have a machlokes, a fight. Shalom l'shem shemayim. They fight for insincere reasons. But what's surprising is, despite the obvious disparity between them, obviously it seems to be more noble to have a fight l'shem shemayim. It's a sincere argument, as opposed to a more insincere, petty shalol hashem. And yet, what is the language of the Mishnah? Many of you are familiar with that. The machlokas shalol hashem shamayim, the insincere, petty, honor-driven machlokas, sofo shaloli hiskayim. It won't last. But the machlokas, which is l'shem shamayim, sincere and pure of motivation, sofo lihiskayim. So it's a very funny phrase of the Mishnah. Because it's a sincere machlokas, its end, its destiny is that it will what? It'll never end, lihiskayim. So the Mefarshim struggle, the commentaries struggle with how to translate that phrase. And there are very many different explanations to try to understand the simple reading. And the simple reading of the Mishnah, I think, is that that's the preferred of the two. But Rav Yisrael Salanter, in a very sharp way, turns the whole Mishnah upside down. He says, a machlokas lo l'shem shamayim, it's insincere, it's petty, it's about money, about honor, things like that. It's bad, but sofo shelo l'iskayim, those things run its course. How much energy does a machlokas like that even have? But a machlokas l'shem shamayim, when people have cloaked themselves in the mantle of pursuing the right, the good, the just, the honest, sofo l'iskayim, that's never going to end. How could I give in? How could I say I'm sorry? How could I stop fighting? It's not my covet, it's Rabbeinu Shalom's covet. I could be Michael on Rabbeinu Shalom's covet. I have to fight. Machlokas Hashem Shamayim, in a certain sense, is much worse. Because then I can never, I have to create problems in the shul. I have to drive the rabbi out. Look what he's doing to the shul. Look what he's doing to the shul. It's not me, it's not personal. I have to make the life of the Rebbe miserable. What, is anything more important than the kinder? I mean, he's a terrible Rebbe. Look what's happening. It's mutter to talk about him in the grocery store. I mean, maybe I'll be talking to somebody Yenta and she'll be able to solve the whole problem. So I have to be, it's a machlokas, shem shemayim, could be forever. And it reminded me, when I saw this idea not long ago, it reminded me years ago in Baltimore, Rabbi Frand once told me something that he had heard from his Rebbe, from Rav Ruderman Zatzal, the great founding Rosh Hashiva of Ne'er Yisrael. So Ruderman used to point out there's two psukim in the seventh chapter in Perek Zayin of Koheles, where Shlomo HaMelech says, in one case, Al Tehi Tzadik Harbe. You shouldn't be such a big tzaddik. Don't be too big of a tzaddik. Don't be too righteous. And then the pasuk in the next verse says, Al Tirsha Harbe. Don't be too wicked. A very funny conjunction, back-to-back verses. But he said that Rabbi Ruderman asked, which one is worse? So it sounds like a ridiculous question. Don't be too wicked or don't be too righteous? But he said, no. Al tiyat tzadik harbe. That's the worst. He says, he touched it exactly like Yisrael Salanter. He says, a person who's too much of a tzaddik, then he can cause all the destruction in the neighborhood. He'll be the worst person for your shul, the worst person for the neighborhood, the worst person for the yeshiva, because a tzaddik harbe can cause all the destruction in the world because they're just of pure of motive. It's like a bull in a china shop, right? They're so convinced of their own purity of motivation, which they may be. But meanwhile, they could take down the whole building. Al tiyat tzaddik harbe. Don't be such a tzaddik. And again, my parallel is, you don't have to be God's only policeman. There could be other people who could also solve the problem. You don't have to do everything, to solve this problem. So again, that, on some level, that could apply even to our personal intra-family, intra-community things, but there's a certain aspect of that which is we are uniquely vulnerable and susceptible to when we get involved in these communal and very large ideological type of machlokas. Just not that long ago, maybe some of you also heard this, right after Nebuchadnezzar, we heard about the boys being killed. There's like a weekly conference call that one of the great contemporary Magidei Shurim and Rabbanim, Rabbi Yisrael Reisman from Tar Vadas and then the community in Flatbush, so he has a conference call with many of his Talmidim who are already out of the yeshiva. And Baruch Hashem for technology, you don't always hear that in the same sentence, Baruch Hashem and technology, but I say Baruch Borei Internet, Baruch Borei technology, that they're able to spread this, even to people who weren't his former Talmud. I consider myself also a Talmud of Rabbi Reisman, even though I never learned the Tar Vadas, because I get emails every week. So sometimes I read them, sometimes I listen to them. So when he spoke to his Talmidim afterwards, after the terrible news, so his main point, it wasn't his only point, but his main point was, that he felt that one of the most painful things in the past year was that, as we all know, there's been some very biting communal machlokas in Eretz Yisrael this past year over the political parties and different moves that certain parties want to make, and probably within this room there'd be differences of opinion over what they call in Israel Shivyon Benetel and these other related issues of compulsory military service and stipends for kollel and things like that. But his point, he was talking to boys living in America, and he was saying that he felt it was terrible that this year his community, his Talmidim, and I'm sure it's not limited to him, it's just he had the courage to talk about it, that in America they're all getting excited and fits and getting involved in these machloksim. And he thought that was unforgivable. He says, the people in Israel have an issue to run their country, so they'll have a machlokas. We need to have a machlokas in America also about this? What are we helping there? Now, he didn't say, which is what I would have wanted him to say, was that we should all move to Eretz Yisrael, and then we could be part of the machlokas. So again, I just, without getting distracted at all by those issues, but that point, I thought he was exactly making this idea. People who would otherwise be calm and not get involved in things, but they decided that this is a machlokas l'shem shamayim. So how, just because I'm living in Brooklyn, just because I'm living in the five towns, just because I'm living in Teaneck, I shouldn't be involved? And his answer is, right, you shouldn't be. Don't be such a tzaddik. Not, this machlokas could exist without you. I promise you, they'll think of all the sides of the issue without you standing in the back of the shul talking about it. They could think about it. So that was his point, and I'm just sharing it with you. For those who want to take it to heart, please. But again, the larger point is that sometimes the communal machlokas rages because, as I say, we cloak ourselves in this mantle of we're fighting God's war. And that, as I say, it's very exciting and empowering to feel ourselves in that role. It's just that the power that we have might be rocket boosting us in the wrong direction. We have to be very, very careful. Last but not least on this point, before we go to the final section, is that I think we don't often appreciate a Gemara and a principle of halacha, which is unequivocal and uncontroversial, and I just don't think we appreciate it. So let me just throw it out there. That is that there is a notion that Gemara tells us in Maseches Eruvin, Daf Yud Gimel, and other places is alluded to, called Elu Ve'elu. Divrei Elokim Chayim. If you're watching a baseball game, did the batter make to home plate before the ball, he got tagged or not? So that's a fact with the right in a replay and slow motion cameras, you could actually really see right or wrong. There is a right, there is a wrong. Whatever the umpire said, but you could even see. But in halacha, it's not so simple. Says the Gemara, talking about Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, they had some of the longest and most major machloksim that we had in all of history. Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel. It's not just about how to light Hanukkah candles. They argued about other things too. Many, many things for many, many years, says the Gemara. And the Gemara says, about such a machlokas, Eilu ve'elu, Divrei Elokim Chayim. We have to know what to do, so we have to light one candle or eight candles on the first day. But you shouldn't denigrate either opinion. So how do you understand this idea? I mean, don't we believe in truth? Is this relativism? So in fact, this is an intriguing and a complex idea. And there's a machlokas. Some mafarshim take a kind of a more minimalist perspective. If anyone wants to see a fascinating source, although this you really have to sit and harav over, as they would say, if you look at the introduction to the work Nesivos HaMishpat, classical halachic work on Jewish civil law, on Choshen Mishpat, but in the introduction, he speaks philosophically about Elu Ve'elu, and he compares it into the olden days of a deep sea diver who's diving for pearls. So what happens? The diver goes down the first time, he thinks he found an oyster, a pearl, comes up, and it's just a rock. Six times, seven times. The tenth time he comes up with the oyster, he comes up with the pearl. But the first nine times were wastes of time. The first time was a waste, and only the tenth time counts. So he says, no, not at all. The first nine times he was refining his sense of touch. He used to think that was an oyster, that was a pearl. No, no. Also, it's not here. It's like on a grid. If you ever played the game Battleship, right? You got to miss a few times before you can get it right. It's if you don't miss and you get it, then that's just luck. The strategy is because knowing how to learn from the misses. He says that's what Elu Ve'elu Divrei Elokim Chayim means. He says, yeah, Taka, there really is only one right opinion, but we never would have found it if it didn't result from a process. You think that one's right, you think that one's right, but you certainly could respect each other because you wouldn't have gotten to your opinion without the foil of the other, and they wouldn't have gotten to their opinion with the foil of you. That's a pretty impressive thing, and that's the more minimalist approach. Rashi and the Ritva no less than that, to the greatest of our medieval thinkers, Rishonim, Rashi and the Ritva present ideas which are far more ambitious than that. They speak about something which can only be described as a kind of a multiple truth theory. How on some divine level they're both true. The one who says you can't eat the chicken and the one who says you could eat the chicken. Kosher and treif, mutter and usser. The Ritva, I'll just mention it, the Ritva quotes from the Chochmei Tzarfas, which means the Tosfos, the great, his contemporaries from France. The Ritva says they had a tradition, again, this is a mystical idea, more of a Kabbalistic idea, but he quotes it from Tosfos, and Ritva and Erevin, Daf Yud Gimel and Beis, the Chochmei Tzarfas say that when Moshe went up on the mountain for 40 days and 40 nights, Hashem taught him every single mitzvah, every single din in all of the Torah, and on each one, 49 stadim lahakil, 49 stadim lahatir, 49 stadim lachayev, 49 stadim. On each issue, not only did he teach him an argument to say one way and an argument to say the opposite, 49 arguments to say yes, 49 arguments to say no. Every possibility any human being will ever come up with is given to Moshe on Sinai. It's just as kadosh as any other. Now, if we would look at the shul down the block, the seminary up the street, the rabbi over there, and we would think, yes, I don't have to give up that I think I'm right. Just for the record, I do think I'm right on the various positions in my life. If I didn't, I wouldn't be doing them. And I know that you feel that way about the things that you're doing, right? If we have a little respect for each other, so why should you take your positions any less seriously than I take mine? I take mine very seriously. I assume you do also. But if we realize that it's not so simple that only I'm right or only you're right. On the contrary, elu ve'elu, divrei Elokim chayim. Whether you want to have more minimal or more maximalist understanding of that. And again, it is true, and again, this would take us not only past mincha, but to much more controversial and sensitive topics, but it is true, this is similar to an idea we also have in Chazal of shivim panim l'Torah, that there's 70 aspects to Torah. And it's worth noting, and I've made this point in other contexts, shivim does not mean literally 70. But what it means is there isn't 71, meaning there are limits too. I like to think in sports, so since we're in the holding by the World Cup, I'll mention, right, even in the sport that we in America call soccer, which the rest of the world calls football, so you have boundaries, you have sidelines, right? It's a wide field. I saw a little bit of that recent semifinal game. I didn't understand what was going on. But I know they were running and running and running. It's a very big field. But there are boundaries, right? So there's shivim panim l'Torah. Within the boundaries, you could do lots of things. But there is such a thing as stepping over the line. So, of course, this begs the question, what's over the line? That would have to be at a different lecture, maybe an entire... That's really not even for the water. That has to be, we have to be at terra firma for such a discussion, okay? But, again, just in case someone was thinking that, I'm acknowledging that I'm punting on that issue. Okay, because that is impossible to discuss in the time that we have, and I think in this context. But I could say, again, let's just speak to, we have a, not a huge, but certainly not a small group on our trip, and we have some very different traditions that are represented in this room and on the trip. And at least by me, I could say very simply that everyone is part of the Elu Elu Divrei Elokim Chayim, even though there's some very different views here, including some views very different than my own. But if we look at each other as Elu Elu Divrei Elokim Chayim, it would solve many, if not most, if not all, of the problems. So I just want to conclude with one last point that we should, because I don't think we appreciate the severity of the problem, and then one last point of chizuk for hopefully the solution. My last point, which could be applied to the intrapersonal husband and wife, neighbor, children, whatever the case is, or the more general, global, communal, ideological, hashkafic, the two types of machlokes, and that is, I don't think that we appreciate, although I'm hoping that this year went a long way towards doing so, but I think as a general rule, I think, and you can agree or disagree if you'd like, I think that as a community and most of us as individuals, we don't truly appreciate the severity of machlokas, of what is that it's really so bad. Because at the end of the day, we all rationalize and we all have a hierarchy which of values, of priorities, and not necessarily is that the Shulchan Aruch's hierarchy, but in our mind, right, just take simple examples, right? It often goes by what we're good at, to be very simplistic, but I think it's often the case. So, right, men who are good at learning give a lot of credence to learning. Right? Women who, let's say, have a natural proclivity to chesed, make that the most important thing. Not only in their lives, but in the way they view other people too. Right? That's a human nature. So aside from the point that we do it often in a way that makes us look better, but besides that, the point is that since none of us are perfect, and all of us only have so much limited energy and time in the day, when we inevitably make mistakes and make shortcomings, we're often choosing. Not just because the Shulchan Aruch told us we aren't even allowed to choose or what to choose, but we often choose. And I think in that subtle but very real and complex calculus, which occurs in our hearts, more often than not, when we're trying to balance and decide what is more or less important, what is more or less severe, I don't believe we typically give enough credence to just how bad machlokes is, how destructive it is on a personal level, how painful it is to Hashem when we get involved in machlokes. So we say, of course, everyone knows machlokes is bad, getting tight is bad, but compared to this other thing, I'm not such a bad guy, because after all, I go to Daf Yomi, so I'm allowed to be machlokes. And I'm tsanua, so I can do this. But we decide on all sorts of things that we, and somehow, machlokes, and the need to avoid it, somehow always is like Cinderella. It's always just coming up a little short. It's always that second, you know, the one that doesn't get as much attention or love. And it's a terrible malady that we have. There's a well-known professor of education and psychology, was a Hasidish Yid, but world-renowned as an academician, Dr. Aaron Hirschfried. You know him, Dr. Fried? So taught at Stern College. He has an article in a journal that comes out of Flatbush called Chakira. Many years ago, it's called the Flatbush Torah Journal. He from Bar Park, they let him write into Flatbush. Okay, so he did many wonderful, yes, the answer is you're right, that's him. He did many wonderful things. But he has an article in this journal years ago where he speaks about not machlokes, but beron lechavero. And how, even though we have yom iyuns, because that's going to solve every problem, and we have asifas, because that'll solve all the other problems that weren't solved yet. He says, at the end of the day, when it comes to beron lechavero, he's speaking generally, but I think everything he said applies specifically to machlokes as well. We know that in our mind, in our hearts, we just don't think it's that important. We just don't buy it. He says, his line is, we don't get a frum buzz from certain things, even though they might be psukim in the Torah. Right? He talks about doing chesed, we don't get the frum high, the frum buzz that we do from when we light candles or blow the shofar. And his a line there, which I love, I think it was his own, and again, he's speaking more generally, but it clearly applies. He says, we won't have reached what we need to do in our community until we get to the point that chutzpah is muktzah. That's a bumper sticker if there ever was one. Chutzpah is muktzah. What do I mean by that? Because every child knows who's raised in our community, muktzah! And there's a certain stage of development in every child where the entire Hilchos Shabbos is muktzah. Right? To drive a car is muktzah. To cook the entire meal, to shech the chicken, to boil the chicken will be muktzah. Right? That became a code for Shabbos. Again, then people get older and they realize that certain things are malachos, other things are muktzah. But what is muktzah? Important. It's also only rabbinic. It's an issur derabanan. Chutzpah, machlokes, lack of derech eretz, banon lechavero. This is daraisa. This is the basis of our entire community. Until the need to avoid machlokes could be as prestigious, as mekubal, as important as muktzah, he points out, we have a way to go. And I'll just conclude with the following idea. We mentioned that the Beis HaMikdash, the second temple, is destroyed because of lack of sinas chinam, a lack of achdus among Jews. And I think sometimes we see that Gemara and we just don't buy it. We just don't believe it. Forgive me, but I think on some level, the first Beis HaMikdash, the cardinal three, the big three of Eros, that we could understand, idolatry, adultery, murder, that's enough to bring down a temple. But just two Jews fighting, that's bringing down the temple, that's going to cause a churban. I think in some level we're skeptical. So I think the answer is what the Maharal of Prague says. He points out in the Netzach Yisrael that the whole existence of the second Beis HaMikdash is predicated, was built on the Kedusha, on the holiness of the Jewish people, of Am Yisrael. And when we no longer act as an Am, as a people, So then, Mamela, automatically, the Beis HaMikdash went away. The way I, in my mind, envision it, I don't know exactly what he meant, but I think I'm doing justice to it, even though he probably didn't think it words. The big three, those type of averos, the things in our mind that we think that are more important, they're like a wrecking ball. You could take a Beis HaMikdash, and I don't just mean the one that once was on Har HaBayis. I mean the one that's in your shul, in your community, or the Beis HaMikdash that should be your home. Anything in holiness in our lives, in certain averos, those big ones, is like a wrecking ball. It could just destroy it from without. But machlokes, sinas chinam, that's like termites. Little bugs, nothing. But that eats away from within. And when you don't have a foundation, then the whole thing comes tumbling down. We live in a time of post-Korban Bayis Sheni. The basis of everything was our achdus as an am. That's what was holding up the Beis HaMikdash, says the Maharal. And when we don't have machlokas, we have sinas chinam, we don't have achdus, so that it's winnowed out, it's hollowed out from within. The only way we're going to rebuild it then is to reverse that process. And if we can, as I say, tap into it to try to hold on to some of that precious achdus and avas Yisrael that everyone felt just a few weeks ago and build on that, so that in Mirat Hashem it won't be long till we can celebrate the binyan of Bayis HaShlishi. Thank you very much.